Chapter 23. County asks whom he pleases to dinner. Answer: Pitt dares not say no, for fear of offending Miss Crawley and missing his legacy when she dies of her apoplexy. Shall I tell you a compliment the captain paid me? I must, it is so pretty. One evening we actually had a dance. There was Sir Huddleston Fuddleston and his family, Sir Giles Wapshot and his young ladies, and I don't know how many more. Well, I heard him say, "Why, Jove, she's a neat little filly," meaning your humble servant, and he did me the honor to dance two country dances with me. He gets on pretty gaily with the young squires, with whom he drinks, bets, rides, and talks about hunting and shooting, but he says the country girls are bores. Indeed, I don't think he is far wrong. You should see the contempt with which they look down on poor me. When they dance I sit and play the piano very demurely, but the other night, coming in rather flushed from the dining room, and seeing me employed in this way, he swore out loud that I was the best dancer in the room, and took a great oath that he would have the fiddlers from Mudbury. "I'll go and play a country dance," said Mrs. Bute Crawley, very readily. She is a little, black-faced old woman in a turban, rather crooked, and with very twinkling eyes, and after the captain and your poor little Rebecca had performed a dance together, do you know she actually did me the honor to compliment me upon my steps? Such a thing was never heard of before. The proud Mrs. Bute Crawley, first cousin to the Earl of Tiptoff, who won't condescend to visit Lady Crawley, except when her sister is in the country. Poor Lady Crawley! During most part of these gaieties, she is upstairs taking pills. Mrs. Bute has all of a sudden taken a great fancy to me. "Why, dear Miss Sharp," she says, "why not bring over your girls to the rectory? Their cousins will be so happy to see them." I know what she means. Signor Clementi did not teach us the piano for nothing, at which price Mrs. Bute hopes to get a professor for her children. I can see through her schemes, as though she told them to me, but I shall go, as I am determined to make myself agreeable. Is it not a poor governess's duty, who has not a friend or protector in the world? The rector's wife paid me a score of compliments about the progress my pupils made, and thought, no doubt, to touch my heart, poor, simple, country soul. As if I cared a fig about my pupils. Your India muslin and your pink silk, dearest Amelia, are said to become me very well. They are a good deal worn now, but, you know, we poor girls can't afford de Frech's toilets. Happy, happy you, who have but to drive to St. James Street, and a dear mother who will give you anything you ask. Farewell, dearest girl. Your affectionate Rebecca. P.S.S. I wish you could have seen the faces of the Miss Blackbrooks, Admiral Blackbrook's daughters, my dear, fine young ladies, with dresses from London, when Captain Rawdon selected poor me for a partner. When Mrs. Bute Crawley, whose artifices are ingenious Rebecca had so soon discovered, had procured from Miss Sharp the promise of a visit, she induced the all-powerful Miss Crawley to make the necessary application to Sir Pitt, and the good-natured old lady, who loved to be gay herself, and to see everyone gay and happy round about her, was quite charmed, and ready to establish a reconciliation and intimacy between her two brothers. It was therefore agreed that the young people of both families should visit each other frequently for the future, and the friendship of course lasted as long as the jovial old mediatrix was there to keep the peace. "Why did you ask that scoundrel, Rawdon Crawley, to dine?" said the rector to his lady as they were walking home through the park. "Don't want the fellow. He looks down upon us country people as so many blackamoors. He's never content unless he gets my yellow sealed wine, which costs me 10 shillings a bottle, hang him. Besides, he's such an infernal character. He's a gambler, he's a drunkard, he's a profligate in every way. He shot a man in a duel, he's over head and ears in debt, and he's robbed me and mine of the best part of Miss Crawley's fortune. Waxy says as he has him here." The rector shook his fist at the moon, with something very like an oath, and added, in a melancholious tone, "Down in her will for 50,000, and there won't be above 30 to divide. I think she's going, said the rector's wife. He was very red in the face when we left dinner. I was obliged to unlace her. She drank 7 glasses of champagne, said the reverend gentleman, in a low voice, and filthy champagne it is too, that my brother poisons us with, but the women never know what's what. We know nothing, said Mrs. Bute Crawley. She drank cherry brandy after dinner, continued his reverence, and took curacao with her coffee. I wouldn't take a glass for a 5-pound note. It kills me with heartburn. She can't stand it, Mrs. Crawley. She must go. Flesh and blood won't bear it. And I lay 5-2, Matilda drops in a year. Indulging in these solemn speculations, and thinking about his debts, and his son Jim at college, and Frank at Woolwich, and the 4 girls, who were no beauties, poor things, and would not have a penny, but what they got from the unexpected legacy, the rector and his lady walked on for a while. Pitt can't be such an infernal villain as to sell the reversion of the living. And that Methodist milks above an eldest son looks to Parliament, continued Mr. Crawley, after a pause. Sir Pitt Crawley will do anything, said the rector's wife. He must get Miss Crawley to make him promise it to James. Pitt will promise anything, replied the brother. He promised he'd pay my college bills when my father died. He promised he'd build the new wing to the rectory. He promised he'd let me have Jip's field and the 6-acre meadow, and much he executed his promises. And it's to this man's son, this scoundrel, gambler, swindler, murderer of a rotten Crawley, that Matilda leaves the bulk of her money. I say it's unchristian. By Jove, it is. The infamous dog has got every vice except hypocrisy, and that belongs to his brother. Hush, my dearest love. We're in Sir Pitt's grounds, interposed his wife. I say he has got every vice, Mrs. Crawley. Don't, ma'am, bully me. Didn't he shoot Captain Marker? Didn't he rob young Lord Dovedale at the Cocoa Tree? Didn't he cross the fight between Bill Soames and the Cheshire Trump, by which I lost 40 pounds? You know he did. And as for the women, why, you heard that before me, in my own magistrate's room. For heaven's sake, Mr. Crawley, said the lady, spare me the details. And you ask this villain into your house? Continued the exasperated rector. Ooh, the mother of a young family, the wife of a clergyman of the Church of England. By Jove! Bute Crawley, you are a fool, said the rector's wife scornfully. Well, ma'am, fool or not, and I don't say, Martha, I'm so clever as you are, I never did. But I won't meet Rodden Crawley, that's flat. I'll go over to Huddleston, that I will, and see his black greyhound, Mrs. Crawley, and I'll run Lancelot against him for 50. By Jove, I will, or against any dog in England. But I won't meet that beast Rodden Crawley. Mr. Crawley, you are intoxicated, as usual, replied his wife. And the next morning, when the rector woke and called for small beer, she put him in mind of his promise to visit Sir Huddleston Fuddleston on Saturday, and as he knew he should have a wet night, it was agreed that he might gallop back again in time for church on Sunday morning. Thus it will be seen that the parishioners of Crawley were equally happy in their squire and in their rector. Miss Crawley had not long been established at the hall before Rebecca's fascinations had won the heart of that good-natured London rake, as they had of the country innocents whom we have been describing. Taking her accustomed drive, one day, she thought fit to order that hat little governess should accompany her to Mudbury. Before they had returned, Rebecca had made a conquest of her, having made her laugh 4 times, and amused her during the whole of the little journey. Not let Miss Sharp dine at table, said she to Sir Pitt, who had arranged a dinner of ceremony, and asked all the neighboring baronets. Why, dear creature, do you suppose I can talk about the nursery with Lady Fuddleston, or discuss justice's business with that goose, old Sir Giles Wapshot? I insist upon Miss Sharp appearing. Let Lady Crawley remain upstairs, if there is no room. But little Miss Sharp. Why, she's the only person fit to talk to in the county. Of course, after such a peremptory order as this, Miss Sharp, the governess, received commands to dine with the illustrious company below stairs. And when Sir Huddleston had, with great pomp and ceremony, handed Miss Crawley into dinner, and was preparing to take his place by her side, the old lady cried out, in a shrill voice, Becky Sharp! Miss Sharp! Come you and sit by me and amuse me, and let Sir Huddleston sit by Lady Wapshot. When the parties were over, and the carriages had rolled away, the insatiable Miss Crawley would say, Come to my dressing room, Becky, and let us abuse the company which, between them, this pair of friends did perfectly. Old Sir Huddleston wheezed a great deal at dinner. Sir Giles Wapshot had a particularly noisy manner of imbibing his soup, and her ladyship a wink of the left eye, all of which Becky caricatured to admiration, as well as the particulars of the night's conversation, the politics, the war, the quarter sessions, the famous run with the HH, and those heavy and dreary themes about which country gentlemen converse. As for the Mrs. Wapshot's toilets and Lady Fuddleston's famous yellow hat, Miss Sharp tore them to tatters, to the infinite amusement of her audience. My dear, you are a perfect travail, Miss Crawley would say. Wish you could come to me in London, but I couldn't make a butt of you as I do of poor Briggs. No, no, you little sly creature. You are too clever, isn't she, Firkin? Mrs. Firkin, who was dressing the very small remnant of hair which remained on Miss Crawley's pate, flung up her head and said, I think Mrs. very clever, with the most killing sarcastic air. In fact, Mrs. Firkin had that natural jealousy which is one of the main principles of every honest woman. After rebuffing Sir Huddleston Fuddleston, Miss Crawley ordered that Rawdon Crawley should lead her into dinner every day, and that Becky should follow with her cushion, or else she would have Becky's arm and Rawdon with the pillow. We must sit together, she said. We're the only three Christians in the county, my love, in which case, it must be confessed, that religion was at a very low ebb in the county of Hants. Besides being such a fine religionist, Miss Crawley was, as we have said, an ultra-liberal in opinions, and always took occasion to express these in the most candid manner. What is birth, my dear, she would say to Rebecca, look at my brother Pitt, look at the Huddlestons, who have been here since Henry II, look at poor Bute at the parsonage, is any one of them equal to you in intelligence or breeding? Equal to you, they are not even equal to poor dear Briggs, my companion, or Bowles, my butler. You, my love, are a little paragon, positively a little jewel. You have more brains than half the shire. If merit had its reward, you ought to be a duchess. No, there ought to be no duchesses at all, but you ought to have no superior, and I consider you, my love, as my equal in every respect. And will you put some coals on the fire, my dear? And will you pick this dress of mine, and alter it, you who can do it so well? So this old philanthropist used to make her equal run of her errands, execute her millinery, and read her to sleep with French novels, every night. At this time, as some old readers may recollect, the genteel world had been thrown into a considerable state of excitement by two events, which, as the papers say, might give employment to the gentleman of the long robe. Ensign Shafton had run away with Lady Barbara Fitzurse, the Earl of Bruin's daughter and heiress, and poor Vere Vane, a gentleman who, up to 40, had maintained a most respectable character, and reared a numerous family, suddenly and outrageously left his home, for the sake of Mrs. Rougemont, the actress, who was 65 years of age. That was the most beautiful part of dear Lord Nelson's character, Miss Crawley said. He went to the deuce for a woman. There must be good in a man who will do that. I adore all impudent matches. What I like best is for a nobleman to marry a miller's daughter, as Lord Flowerdale did. It makes all the women so angry. I wish some great man would run away with you, my dear. I'm sure you're pretty enough. Two postboys. Oh, it would be delightful, Rebecca owned. and what I like next best is for a poor fellow to run away with a rich girl. I have set my heart on Rodden running away with someone. A rich someone, or a poor someone. Why, you goose? Rodden is not a shilling, but what I give him. He is crippled to debts, he must repair his fortunes, and succeed in the world. Is he very clever? Rebecca asked. Clever, my love, not an idea in the world beyond his horses, and his regiment, and his hunting, and his play. But he must succeed, he's so delightfully wicked. Don't you know he has hit a man, and shot an injured father through the head only? He's adored in his regiment, and all the young men at Wadier's, and the cocoa tree swear by him. When Miss Rebecca Sharp wrote to her beloved friend the account of the little ball at Queen's Crawley, and the manner in which, for the first time, Captain Crawley had distinguished her, she did not, strange to relate, give an altogether accurate account of the transaction. The captain had distinguished her a great number of times before. The captain had met her in a half score of walks. The captain had lighted upon her in a half hundred of corridors and passages. The captain had hung over her piano 20 times of an evening. My lady was now upstairs, being ill, and nobody heeded her, as Miss Sharp sang. The captain had written her notes the best that the great blundering dragoon could devise and spell. But dullness gets on as well as any other quality with women. But when he put the first of the notes into the leaves of the song she was singing, the little governess, rising, and looking him steadily in the face, took up the triangular missive daintily, and waved it about, as if it were a cocked hat, and she, advancing to the enemy, popped the note into the fire, and made him a very low curtsy, and went back to her place, and began to sing away again more merrily than ever. What's that? Said Miss Crawley, interrupted in her after-dinner doze by the stoppage of the music. It's a false note, Miss Sharp said with a laugh, and Rodden Crawley fumed with rage and mortification. Seeing the evident partiality of Miss Crawley for the new governess, how good it was of Mrs. Bute Crawley not to be jealous, and to welcome the young lady to the rectory, and not only her, but Rodden Crawley, her husband's rival in the old maid's 5%. They became very fond of each other's society, Mrs. Crawley and her nephew. He gave up hunting, he declined entertainments at Fuddleston. He would not dine with the mess of the depot at Mudbury. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.